What if the secret to market success isn't hidden in complex algorithms or insider information, but in understanding the quirks of the human mind? Over 5 decades on Wall Street, one legendary investor discovered that markets move less on data and more on the irrational patterns of human behavior. When everyone around him was chasing dot-com dreams in the late 1990s, he saw something else entirely. A psychological epidemic that would end in tears. His insight wasn't mystical. It came from watching the same human follies replay across different eras, like an archaeologist recognizing ancient patterns in modern ruins. Markets, he realized, are popularity contests masquerading as rational systems driven by fear, greed, and the desperate need to belong. Picture trying to predict tomorrow's weather by studying last year's patterns. You might get close, but you'll miss the unexpected storm. Markets work the same way, resisting neat theories because they're shaped by psychology and incomplete knowledge. The caribou factor, when environmental concerns about caribou migration unexpectedly stalled the Alaska pipeline, perfectly captures this unpredictability. Just when you think you've figured out the pattern, reality throws a curveball. Despite extraordinary success, the insight remained. No system consistently beats the market because the future never simply replays the past. Markets function like popularity contests, short-term, but weighing machines long-term. Jerome Levy, a Pennsylvania hosiery wholesaler born in 1882, developed economic theories so prescient he exited the market before the 1929 crash. His equations measuring profit sources, considering capital spending, consumer credit, and government deficits, essentially described gross national product before such measures existed. Unlike Polish economist Michał Kalecki, who independently developed similar theories but saw unemployment as capitalism's inevitable fate, Jerome believed proper government could ensure full employment while preserving freedom. His son Leon absorbed this worldview through dinner conversations, writing home about investments from summer camp while other kids described swimming. Despite mediocre grades at City College, Leon later taught securities analysis there. Dad viewed economics not as a way to make money, but as a means to improve society, he reflected decades later. Two companies illustrate how perspective shapes outcomes. Montgomery Ward hoarded cash, expecting another depression, while Sears bet on suburban shopping centers. One decision led to stagnation, the other to spectacular growth. Fresh perspectives come not from secret formulas, but from thinking independently, often by imagining present events from different historical contexts. At 26, Leon invested $12,500 to join Oppenheimer & Company as research director. His unconventional hiring philosophy? Avoid anyone who remembered the Depression, reasoning that trauma breeds caution. His first interview question? Whether candidates owned stocks. If not, the conversation ended. This attracted remarkable characters like Frances Haidt, one of Wall Street's first female securities analysts in 1956, and Rodney White, a Yale law dropout and Navy demolition expert who played jazz piano between analyzing stocks. Jack Nash provided what Leon lacked: administration, trading skill, and ethical vigilance. Eugene Fenton viewed markets like football: 22 players, 80,000 spectators, all with stakes and moods affecting each other. His key insight? At turning points, prognosticators are usually wrong. Launching the Oppenheimer Fund in the late 1950s revealed how consensus-seeking blinds investors. Mutual funds offered clear advantages, eliminating broker-client conflicts, retaining customers, collecting fees on growing assets. Yet two prudent innovations, shorting stocks for downside protection and taking large positions in undervalued companies, were labeled speculative, proving how unfamiliarity masquerades as risk. Markets reward extreme risk-takers. Leverage investments 100 times, and 0.3% becomes 30%, but you'd better be right. This attracts aggressive competitors, whose qualities bring both success and destruction. Gene Fenton exemplified this pattern. Despite astute analysis, greed undermined him. His variable rate mortgages had one fatal flaw: rates could only rise, never fall. Marian Sandler recognized the potential of truly adjustable mortgages, and she and husband Herb founded Golden West Financial, becoming one of America's largest SNLs. Bernie Kornfeld crossed into outright fraud, running a Ponzi scheme through Investors Overseas Services. William Zeckendorf represented a different type, driven by ideals over greed. Despite financial misadventures, his zeal for beautiful buildings improved American skylines. We deceive ourselves constantly as investors, attributing gains to skill and losses to misfortune. In 1957, Underwood seemed logical when Olivetti bought majority control. Italian style was seductive, beautiful machines, happy workers, polished managers. Then IBM's revolutionary Selectric arrived, and Underwood collapsed, nearly taking Olivetti down too. Investors form unhealthy attachments to price points. Someone who bought Intel at $40, watched it climb to $76, then plummet, often refuses to sell, anchored to that peak. The same $100 feels triumphant if you bought it one, but catastrophic if the stock once hit $300. Americans typically sell winners and hold losers because realizing a loss feels like admitting failure. The opposite approach works better. Selling losers captures tax benefits and frees mental energy. When exiting a troubled position, sell at least a third or half. The psychological shift required to change your conviction demands meaningful action. In 1962, noticing Cinerama's CEO buying his own stock led to a meeting. His stunning Park Avenue office and charisma were dazzling as he described grand plans for three-dimensional films. Walking into a snowstorm brought sudden clarity. No one could be as good as he seemed. Selling when the first movie premiered proved one of the rare times selling occurred near a stock's all-time high. The Oppenheimer Fund's success revealed what investors wanted: strength, unity, organization, purpose, and familiarity. The chosen symbol, four linked hands grasping wrists, borrowed from Benjamin Franklin's fire insurance company, resonated. Over its first decade, the fund achieved the best performance of any mutual fund, according to the New York Times. The late 1990s American market bubble rivaled history's greatest manias, despite clear warnings. Companies inflated earnings through accounting tricks, treating ordinary expenses as extraordinary, booking premature revenues, counting investment gains as earnings. Celebrated productivity gains proved illusory. Only computers showed real growth, possibly from creative accounting. Observing companies with undervalued divisions revealed arbitrage opportunities during disaggregation periods. This led to profitable investments, including the bankrupt Chicago, Milwaukee, St. Paul, and Pacific Railroad, which, despite losing $500,000 daily, owned millions of acres and access to major coal regions. Markets reward independent thinking over groupthink. Fear of the unknown blinds people to opportunities, while past traumas make conservative strategies seem speculative. When declining deals, he'd gaze at their fictitious founder's portrait and declare, "I don't think the captain would have wanted us to be in this deal." Investing requires both intuition and analysis. There's no secret formula. The information guiding successful investments is almost always public. Investing remains an art mastered through practice and learning from mistakes. Taking small positions in stocks you want to follow is the best approach. Practitioners always outperform professors. The greatest wisdom is accepting uncertainty while acting decisively. Markets swing between fear and greed because human nature doesn't change. Your edge isn't information, it's understanding yourself and others well enough to act when everyone else is paralyzed by emotion. Markets function like popularity contests short-term, but weighing machines long-term, rewarding those who see beyond immediate frenzy to underlying value. The market first rewards overreachers, then punishes them, a cycle as predictable as the seasons, yet as difficult to time as catching lightning.